The Acadian Expulsion. Once upon a time, in a country in the north, dwelt a very happy race of people. The land did not lie so far north, but that it had bright springs and sunny summers, and all through the valleys lay pretty little villages surrounded with orchards and fields and meadows. And little dark-eyed children wandered through the orchards in the morning sunshine and broke off boughs of pink-tinted blossoms whereon the dew lay not yet dried, and through green-carpeted fields where the young grain waved, and through the high meadow grass, gathering daisies and sweet wild forget-me-nots. All day long the place was bright and happy with children's faces and children's voices. The tiny streams that crept down from the mountains loved the little faces that leaned over them, and the little hands that threw dainty flowers on their merry, rippling waves. Even the birds that flew down into the shady, silent corners to drink showed no fear if, perchance, they found a little child there before them. The wind that sung through the pines at the foot of the mountain sung only words of peace, and the whole place seemed only to know blue skies, sweet, fragrant breezes, and floods of golden sunshine. And when the bright, happy days came to an end, then the children would gather on the doorsteps of the quaint little houses, and while they watched the moon rise large and silvery over the spire of the church, they would listen to the stories told by their fathers and mothers of the land beyond the great sea, which their ancestors had sailed away from forever when they came to find a new home in this northern land. The children dearly loved to hear the stories of that faraway France which their great-grandfathers and great-grandmothers but dimly remembered, for although their own homes were in America, they always thought of themselves as French. They knew nothing of England or English customs, and English children would have seemed strangers to them, while the little Indian boys and girls with whom they played seemed dear and familiar friends. For in this northern land, which the French people called Acadia, because it was such a lovely and beautiful place, the Indians had always been well treated by the whites, and they were very fond of them in return. The Indian children played in the streets with the French children, and wandered with them through the meadows and forests. The Indian fathers and mothers went to the village churches, and learned of the good priests how to lead useful and happy lives, and they brought their children to be baptized and confirmed, and wanted them to grow up knowing how to live the same kind of lives that their little French neighbors would live when they grew up. And so, for many years, these people lived in this pleasant country, and were contented and happy. But by and by trouble came. Acadia was taken away from the French and given to the English, who sent their soldiers there. The Acadians were very sorry for this. They did not want to belong to England, for they were French and loved France. At that time, both England and France had armies in America, and both were trying to get as much land as they could. And as the English were the more successful in this war, they got possession of Acadia and changed its name to Nova Scotia. Then there was an English governor sent there to rule the country, and although the Acadians loved the French, they promised not to help them, but said they would give help neither to the English nor the French. But the English were not satisfied with this. They were all the time afraid that the Acadians would help the French. So one day the English commander sent a fleet of vessels to Acadia, and all the Acadians were told to gather in the churches and listen to the reading of some papers that had been sent there by him. The Acadians came, but no sooner were they all gathered together than the English soldiers drove them all down to the harbor where the ships lay. Then they were driven on the ships in crowds, and neighbors and friends and families were all separated, perhaps a father in one ship, a mother in another, and their children in a third. There was no time to say goodbye to their pretty little homes, no time to say goodbye to dear friends. As soon as they had been crowded on the ships, the soldiers set fire to their homes, and soon the peaceful villages of Acadia were utterly destroyed. Nothing remained of the once lovely place but heaps of ashes, burned fields, and desolate tracts of country. The ships sailed away to different ports, and the Acadians were scattered all over the country. Friends who had been separated often never met again, and the little boys and girls who had played so happily in the green fields of Acadia were now to go sorrowing all their lives for the dear playmates they would never see again. It was a very cruel thing to do. It was an act unworthy the heart of an English soldier who could not but remember his own home in fair green England. It was something that the English ought to have been ashamed to do, for the Acadians were a peaceful people and not likely to make them any trouble. But sometimes in war, men forget that they are men and act cruelly and wrongly, and that is what the English did when they drove the Acadians from their homes to wander homeless and poor and sad all over the country. If you should go to Nova Scotia today, you would not find the Acadia of that far-off time. The country is English now, and the only memories of Acadia are those that linger in the lonely mountain echoes, in the sad sighing of the pines, in the wildflowers of the meadow, which make you think of the children that once played there, in the soft murmur of the streams, which seem to sing, as you listen, long-forgotten tunes, and in the deep roar of the sea, on whose waves the Acadians were borne away forever from that beautiful, happy land which became but a dream of the past. The poet Henry Wadsworth Longfellow wrote a poem called Evangeline that tells the story of the Acadian expulsion. The grandmother of the real girl the poem is based upon left us an eyewitness look at these events. My native land is called Acadia. It is a cold and desolate region during winter, and snow covers the ground during several months of the year. It is rocky, and huge and rugged stones lie strewn over the surface of the ground in many places, and one must struggle hard for a livelihood there, especially with the poor and meager tools possessed by my people. Yet I grieve for my native land, with its rocks and snows, because I have left there a part of my heart in the graves of those I love so well and who sleep under its sod. And as she spoke thus, her eyes streamed with tears, and emotion choked her utterance. You must know, Petios, that less than 100 years ago, Acadia was a French province, whose people lived contented and happy. The King of France sent brave officers to govern the province, and these officers treated us with the greatest kindness. Our manner of living in Acadia was peculiar, the people forming, as it were, one single family. Although poor, they were honest and industrious, and they lived contented with what little they had, without envying their neighbors. And how could it be otherwise? If anyone was unable to do his field work because of illness or of some other misfortune, his neighbors flew to his assistance, and it required but a few days' work with their combined efforts to weed his field and save his crop. Thus it was that, incited by noble and generous feeling, the inhabitants of the province seemed to form one single family, and not a community composed of separate families. We lacked none of the comforts of life, and although not wealthy, we were not in want, as our wishes were few and easily satisfied. I will now relate to you what befell them. It was on a Sunday. I remember this as if it were but yesterday. We were attending Mass, and when our old curate ascended his pulpit, as he was wont to do every Sunday, he announced to us that war was being waged between France and England. My children, said he in sad and solemn tones, you may expect to witness awful scenes and to undergo sore trials, but God will not forsake you if you put your trust in his infinite mercy. And then, kneeling down, he prayed aloud for France, and we all responded to his fervent voice and said, Amen, from the depths of our heart. A painful silence prevailed in the little church until Mass was over. As we left the church, the people grouped themselves on all sides to discuss the sad news, and we retired mournfully and quietly to our homes. This intelligence troubled us, and we tried in vain to shake off the gloom that darkened our souls. 6 months passed away without our receiving the least intelligence. One morning, at dawn of day, a young man was lying unconscious on the green near the church. His arm was shattered, and he had bled profusely. It was with the greatest difficulty that we restored him to life. When he opened his eyes, his looks were wild and terrified, and despite his weakness, he made a desperate effort to rise and flee. "The English," said he, "have landed troops on the eastern coast of Acadia and are committing the most atrocious cruelties. Their inhumanity surpasses belief. They pillage and burn our villages, and even lay sacrilegious hands on the sacred vessels in our churches. They tear the wives from their husbands, the children from their parents, and they drive their ill-fated victims to the seashore and stow them on ships which sail immediately for unknown lands." One of our elders spoke as follows. "My good friends," said he, "our hopes were illusory, and the future is big with ominous threats for us. A cruel and relentless enemy is at our doors. The story of the wounded man is true. The English are applying the torch to our villages and are spreading the scattering ruin as they advance. They spare neither old age nor infirmity, neither women nor children, and are tender-hearted only to renegades and apostates. Are you ready to accept these humiliating conditions and to be branded as traitors and cowards?" "Never," we answered, "never." "Then let exile be our lot. Let us prepare for the worst, for today we bid adieu forever, perhaps to Acadia, to our homes, to the graves of those we love so well. We leave friendless and penniless to distant lands. We leave for Louisiana, where we shall be free to honor and reverence France and to serve our God according to our belief." These words chilled our hearts, and yet, without a tear, without a complaint, we resigned ourselves to our fate. Ah, it was a cruel day to us. We were leaving Acadia. We were abandoning our homes where our children were born and raised. Everything that we saw, every object that we touched, recalled to our hearts some sweet remembrance of days gone by. We were leaving them forever. The terrible ordeal we were undergoing did not shake our resolve, and submitting to the will of God, we preferred exile and poverty before dishonoring ourselves by becoming traitors and renegades. Our people, so meek, so peaceable, became frenzied with despair. The women and children wandered from house to house, wailing and uttering piercing cries. Every object of spoil was destroyed, and the torch was applied to the houses. Oh, the ruin, Petios. It was horrible. As darkness came, we cast a sad look toward the spot where our peaceful and happy St. Gabriel once stood. Alas, we could see nothing but the crimson sky reflecting the lurid glare of the flames that devoured our Acadian villages. Not a word fell from our lips as we journeyed slowly on, and as night came, its darkness increased our misery, and such was our dejection that we would have faced death without a shudder. It was decided to reach Canada the best way we could, after which, after crossing the great northern lakes, our journey was to be overland to the Mississippi River, on whose waters we would float down to Louisiana, a French colony inhabited by people of our own race and professing the same religious creed as ours. But to carry out this plan, we had to travel thousands of miles through a country barren of civilization, through endless forests, and across lakes as wide and deep as the sea. We knelt down to implore the aid and protection of God in the many dangers that beset us, and, trusting in His kind providence, we lay down on the bare ground to sleep. When the moon rose, dispelling by degrees the darkness of night, we again pursued our journey. We made the least noise possible as we advanced cautiously, our fears and apprehensions increasing at every step. All at once our column halted. A death-like silence prevailed. We had not advanced 200 yards when we were halted by a company of English soldiers. Ah, Petios, our doom was sealed. We were in a narrow path surrounded by the enemy, without the possibility of escape. How shall I describe what followed? The women wrung their hands and sobbed piteously in their despair. The children, terrified, uttered shrill and piercing cries, while the men, goaded to madness, vented their rage in hurried exclamations. The officer in command approached us. "Acadians," said he, "you have fled from your homes after having reduced them to ashes. You have used seditious language against England, and we find you here in the depth of night, congregated and conspiring against the king, our liege, lord, and sovereign. You are traitors, and you shall be treated as such. But in his clemency, the king offers his pardon to all who will swear fealty and allegiance to him." "Sir," answered René Leblanc, under whose guidance we had left St. Gabriel, "our king is the king of France, and we are not traitors to the king of England, whose subjects we are not. If by the force of arms you have conquered this country, we are willing to recognize your supremacy, but we are not willing to submit to English rule, and for that reason we have abandoned our homes to emigrate to Louisiana, to seek there, under the protection of the French flag, the quiet and peace and happiness we have enjoyed here." The officer who had listened with folded arms to the noble words of René Leblanc replied with a scowl of hatred, "To Louisiana you wish to go. To Louisiana you shall go, and seek in vain, under the French flag, that protection you have failed to receive from it in Canada. Soldiers," he added, with a smile that made us shudder, "escort these worthy patriots to the seashore, where transportation will be given them free in His Majesty's ships." These words sounded like a death knell to us. We saw plainly that our doom was sealed. They treated us most brutally, and they drove us back through the forest to the seashore, where their ships were anchored, and stowing the greater number of our party in one of their ships, they weighed anchor, and she set sail. The balance of our people had been embarked on another vessel, which had departed in advance of ours. We were huddled in a space scarcely large enough to contain us. We could not lie down to rest our weary limbs. With but scant food, with the water given grudgingly to us, barely enough to wet our parched lips, with no one to care for us, you can well imagine that our sufferings became unbearable. At last our ship was anchored, and we were told that we had reached the place of our destination. "Was it Louisiana?" we inquired. Rude scoffs and sharp invectives were their only answer. We were disembarked with the same ruthless brutality with which we had been dragged to their ship. They landed us on a precipitous and rocky shore, and leaving us a few rations, saluted us in derision with their caps, and bidding farewell to the noble patriots, as they called us. Our anguish at that moment can hardly be conceived. We were outcasts in a strange land. We were friendless and penniless, with a few rations thrown to us as to dogs. The sun had now set, and we were in agony of despair. Our only hope rested in the mercy of a kind providence, and with hearts too full for utterance, we knelt down with one accord and silently besought the Lord of hosts to vouchsafe to us that pity and protection which He gives to the most abject of His creatures. Never was a more heartfelt prayer wafted to God's throne. When we arose, hope, once more smiling to us, irradiated our souls and dispelled, as if by magic, the gloom that had settled in our hearts. With a clear conscience, we lay down to sleep under the blue canopy of the heavens. The dawn of day found us scattered in groups, discussing the course we were to pursue, and our hearts grew faint anew at the thought of the unknown trials that awaited us. At that moment, we spied two horsemen approaching our camp. Our hearts fluttered with emotion. We felt as if Providence had not forsaken us. When the cavaliers alighted, they addressed us in English, but in words so soft and kind that the sound of the hated language did not grate on our ears and seemed as sweet as that of our tongue. They bowed gracefully to us and introduced themselves as Charles Smith and Henry Brent. "We are informed," said they, "that you are exiles and that you have been cast penniless on our shores. We have come to greet you and to welcome you to the hospitality of our roofs." These kind words sank deep in our hearts. "Good sirs," answered René Leblanc, "you behold a wretched people bereft of their homes and whose only crime is their love for France and their devotion to the Catholic faith." And saying this, he raised his hat, and every man of our party did the same. "We thank you heartily for your greeting and for your hospitality so generously tendered. See, we number over 200 persons, and it would be taxing your generosity too heavily. No one but a king could accomplish your noble design." "Sir," they answered, "we are citizens of Maryland, and we own large estates. We have everything in abundance at our homes, and this abundance we are willing to share with you. Accept our offer, and the Brent and Smith families will ever be grateful to God, who has given them the means to minister to your wants, assuage your afflictions, and soothe your sorrows." How could we decline an offer so generously made? It was impossible for us to find words expressive our gratitude. Unable to utter a single word, we shook hands with them, but our silence was far more eloquent than any language we could have used. The same day we moved to their farms, which lay nearby, and I shall never forget the kind welcome we received from these two families. They vied with each other in their kind offices toward us, and ministered to our wants with so much grace and affability that it gave additional charm and value to their already boundless hospitality. Petios, let the name of Brent and of Smith remain enchased forever like precious jewels in your hearts. Let their remembrance never fade from your memory, for more generous and worthier beings never breathed the pure air of heaven. Thus it was that we settled in Maryland after leaving Acadia. 3 years passed away peacefully and happily, and during the whole of that time, the Smith and Brent families remained our steadfast friends. It was then decided to continue their journey to Louisiana. Our journey was slow and tedious, for 1,000 obstacles impeded our progress. We entered deep and rapid streams that we could not cross for want of boats. We traveled through mountain defiles, where the pathway was narrow and dangerous, winding over hill and dale and over craggy steeps, where one false step might hurl us down into the yawning chasm below. We suffered from storms and pelting rains, and at night when we halted to rest our weary limbs, we had only the light canvases of our tents to shelter us from the inclemency of the weather. Ah, we were undergoing sore trials, but we were lulled by the hope that far, far away in Louisiana, our dreamland, we would find our kith and kin. That radiant hope illumined our pathway. It shone as a beacon light on which we kept our eyes riveted, and it steeled our hearts against sufferings and privations almost too great to be borne otherwise. Thus we advanced fearlessly, aye, almost cheerfully, and at night when we pitched our tents in some solitary spot, our Acadian songs broke the silence and loneliness of the solitude. At last we launched on the turbulent waters of the Mississippi and floated down that noble stream as far as Bayou Plaquemines in Louisiana, where we landed. As the tidings of our arrival spread abroad, a great number of Acadian exiles flocked to our camp to greet and welcome us. How can I describe our joy and rapture when we recognized countenances familiar to us? Grasping their hands, with hearts too full for utterance, we wept like children. Many a sorrowing heart revived to love and happiness on that day. Many a wife pressed to her bosom a long-lost husband. Many a fond parent clasped in rapturous embrace a loving child. Ah, such a moment repaid us 1,000-fold for all our sufferings and privations, and we spent the day in rejoicing, conviviality, and merriment. You must not imagine that the Teche region was at that time dotted all over like nowadays with thriving farms, elegant houses, and handsome villages. No, it required the nerve and perseverance of your Acadian fathers to settle there. Although beautiful and picturesque, it was a wild region inhabited mostly by Indians and by a few white men, trappers and hunters by occupation. Such was the region your ancestors settled, and which, by their energy, they have transformed into a garden teeming with wealth. The Acadians enrich themselves in a country where no one will starve if he is industrious, and where one may easily become rich if he fears God and if he is economical and orderly in his affairs. And my tale is told. Your Acadian fathers were martyrs in a noble cause, and you should always be proud to be the sons of martyrs and of men of principle.